You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And those of you who are joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. We're delighted you're here, and I think you're going to be delighted as well. If you are new, you do need to know that we have a free weekly newsletter. Just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. And you'll see a button there with red letters on it. It says K-Files E-Zine. And you click that, and a few seconds later, you're subscribed, all right? You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. No strings attached. You've all heard about Chupacabra, right? I mean, we've done shows on Chupacabra. Fascinating phenomena in South America primarily, although in other places too. Well, now there is the creepy gnome. I am not kidding you. There is apparently a creature afoot in South America that is sort of loosely referred to as the gnome. And there were some young people out playing and having a good time, young teenagers, just, you know, out messing around outside. And all of a sudden, they saw this thing coming towards them. And they shot footage of it with their cell phone. Experts who have examined this footage, taken in the town of Clodomira, in the province of Santiago del Estero in Argentina, say that it is credible. According to one of the witnesses, he said this tiny thing started running down Avenue San Martin at us. It had a pointy head and dark clothes. It was a person of incredibly low stature. We filmed it, then got scared and ran off. This little thing was barking like a dog, but running sideways on two legs, and it headed off towards the football stadium. So I have not yet seen the footage that they're talking about. I'm sure it's going to show up sooner or later. It'll be on YouTube or on Google Video, and it will show up, and we'll get a chance to see it. I haven't seen it. Now, if you have, could you send me a link to where I can take a look at it? It's, you know, nobody really has gotten any good footage of a chupacabra, but apparently this there's some footage of this gnome. I would love to see it. You know, cryptozoology is, that's the study of weird life forms. This study of cryptozoology is an amazing field. You hear all kinds of reports, and you hear all kinds of really bizarre things, but then every once in a while someone comes up with a picture or some video, and it's for real. So if you've seen this or if you find the link, send it to me. And you do that, just go to our contact page, and look, when you send me a link, you're suggesting that I look at a link, right? So on the subject, it's a drop-down box. How about using suggestion? Because that gets to me quicker than if you put it like in a listener comment. You're not commenting on it, you're suggesting. So send me the link. I will eventually get it, no matter what you put in the subject box. But use the contact page. That gets you past all our spam filters. My guest this evening is Dr. Judy Wood. We're going to be talking not so much about who done it, but what done it. The World Trade Center. We'll be back. My guest this evening on the Kevin Smith Show is Dr. Judy Wood. She has her background a little bit, her educational background, which I think you will want to know when we begin to talk about what we are going to talk about tonight. She has a Bachelor's of Science degree in civil engineering from Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University in Blacksburg, Virginia. Master of Science in Engineering Mechanics, Applied Physics, Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University in Blacksburg, Virginia, and a Ph.D. in Materials Engineering Science from the Department of Engineering Science and Mechanics at Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University in Blacksburg, Virginia. She is a former assistant professor and of mechanical engineering and probably some more things that I'm leaving out. Her research into the disaster known to us now these days as 9-1-1 has led her to the conclusion that the official report is incorrect. Her research is not so much focused on whodunit as what done it. Dr. Judy Wood, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's jump right into this thing. I want to come back to your background in a little bit and get you to explain some things to us, but that gives us a little bit of an overview. And I want to jump right into the big question that I've got. Now, we have all seen over and over and over the videos of the airplane crashing into the World Trade Center. I've also seen videos that claim it was not a commercial aircraft, and I've seen a video, these are on YouTube, that claims that it, in fact, was not an aircraft at all, that it was a holographic image, and there were no planes that crashed into the World Trade Center. So let me ask you, did those airplanes that we think we saw, in fact, crash into the World Trade Center?
Well, I know that, you know, I don't know what exactly happened, how that got there. I don't know for sure. But one thing I know is Boeing 767 could not have made a cookie cutter cutout unless it was in a Roadrunner cartoon.
Okay, so you're saying that you don't know what hit it, but it was not the airplanes that we think we saw.
Correct.
Okay. Now, let's go back to your background just a little bit. Explain to us what it is that you do professionally. What is it that you do? What's your expertise?
Interferometry and experimental mechanics.
How does that apply to the research that you've done?
Well, looking at material properties of unknown materials, I can determine, you know, what's going on with it. I'm observing what's happening in samples. And my favorite method of exploring these things is with Moiré interferometry, which is two-beam interference, mm-hmm. Optical beams, and looking at very small deformations and how materials interact.
So if I can... Yeah, if I come to you with a sample, a piece of steel, And I say, look, this is from a structure that failed. I don't know what caused it to fail. Can you determine what it is that has happened with this piece of steel and caused it to fail?
Reasonably so, yes. I can't tell you what happened to the entire structure with just one piece, but I can tell you whether it was from a brittle failure, from an overload, or from weakening of some sort.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now let's go back to your taking a look at the World Trade Center and all of that that whole event. What is it that triggered you to do that? I mean, were you just naturally interested in it, or did you see something in the videos that just got your attention?
Well, I'm they say trained for observing, and I really like to look at, you know, disaster scenes. My students used to nickname me the disaster queen because I was always talking about what caused this so we can build it better. And so my focus is on, you know, what went wrong so we can correct it. But when I saw the buildings unraveling on 9/11, that was not a collapse I saw. It looked like a sweater that was unraveling. And it didn't make sense. It also went away much faster than a building could possibly collapse. So the timing wasn't good. The ground shook.
All right. Now, most of us have seen videos on television of buildings being imploded and brought down. And I describe for me what I missed. It looked to me like that's what happened. It looked to me like it was imploded and, you know, that it was a controlled implosion and that it was brought down that way. Why was that not the case?
Well, one of the biggest hallmarks of a controlled demolition is that you see flashes. You hear a bang, 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 and then the building starts moving. And you see little flashes when you're hearing those bangs going on. And then when the thing drops, it breaks up when it slams to the ground, when it hits the ground. And then, you know, with little things going off here and there, you see chunks go flying. And those chunks stay as chunks as they go flying. But what we saw with the towers, the chunks go dissolve into dust before they hit the ground.
Okay, so
some weren't even chunks. It looked like the building just turned into steam instantly.
And so what do you deduce from that?
Well, also with the, you know, the standard controlled demolition from bombs in the building, you're left with a pile of stuff. You look at this stuff and you can recognize what it had been, or parts of things. It's just basically the building's down on the ground where you can saw it up into pieces and do, you know, cart it away. But on 9/11, right after the event, you look and where'd the building go? It just disappeared. It went away, it blew away in the wind.
Well, I thought there were big chunks of it that they hauled away. And that big pieces of the steel and so forth were used to make other things. And in fact, let me tell you.
A lot of things we're told, and I try to focus on is what I see, because we know it was a psychological operation of some sort. Because, for one thing, you know, the building material as of noon on that day was just less than one story tall. And it did not collapse the basement. Didn't destroy the bathtub. There's a water retaining bathtub around the entire understructure to keep out the Hudson because it's built about seven stories below the water table down to the bedrock.
Mm-hmm.
And if that building had slammed down, it would have, you know, destroyed the bathtub and it would have destroyed all of southern Manhattan. It would have been flooded.
How tall, and this may be an unfair question, it may not be something that you have looked at, but if it had been a controlled implosion so that they used explosive devices and bring the building down, how tall a pile of rubble should we expect to see there?
Well, I would guess like, you know, 20 stories.
20 stories of rubble.
We're talking about a building that was over a quarter mile tall, 500,000 tons each.
And how tall was the pile of rubble that we actually saw?
Oh, one story, you know, approximately, plus or minus different areas. There's photos I have where right after the event, you can look from the east side through to the west side of the complex at ground level the whole way. There's an eight-story building right next to where Tower 1 had stood, and it towers over the whatever remained of Tower 1.
Okay.
And another interesting fact is you look at, and there's this little bit of outer wall I call wheat checks, the little prefab, three columns by three stories tall. There, you can just see about eight stories worth of these and nothing else. And where'd the other 102 stories worth go of the north wall, much less the east wall, the south wall, and all the stuff in between?
What is it that you think happened? If it's not the controlled explosions, and if it was not airplanes that hit the buildings, what happened?
Well, I came to this very slowly. As some sort of energy, directed energy weapons, I called it. I don't know what this is. I didn't even know that such things existed before I started looking at this, but the evidence told me it did.
All right, so you came to the conclusion that the World Trade Center was brought down by directed energy weapons. What is it, do you think, that slammed into the building in that video? Because we see it slam into the building and an explosion out the other side of debris.
Well, that would be getting into the area of speculation. I usually don't like to go there. But it wasn't an airplane. And, you know, various witnesses said they didn't hear anything coming. They just heard an explosion.
And
but there are those who say they saw something. They don't talk about, you know, when you're sitting at the end of a runway and a jet's taking off, man, you duck. That's a loud noise.
Okay.
You know, I don't know how many decibels you put your hands over your ears. There was no one who had described that type of sound.
Okay. So if it's a directed energy weapon, from where would this weapon have been fired?
Well, I don't classify as, you know, something like a laser gun or something like that. What I define as directed energy weapon is that it involves energy that was directed and was used as a weapon. In a very broad sense, because I don't know what all is available out there. And I don't think most people know, because there's a lot of top secret things by various governments around the world. But
right.
What I do know is it was not a kinetic energy device like a bomb. And there are weird things that happen all around southern Manhattan. Do you realize there was at least 1,400 cars that got toasted? And I call it toasted as in their history.
As a matter of fact,
some look like they're burning, but they're burning at room temperature. Paper sitting next to him that wasn't burning.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I have some pictures that I took from your website. And you mentioned the cars. Now, I have here a picture of a police car that I've just put up. What's the significance of this toasted police car?
It's about a mile away from the World Trade Center.
A mile away?
By the Hudson River.
And they're claiming that this car was damaged as a result of the World Trade Center?
This is one of, you know, 1,400 cars all around the area. What is peculiar about, wherever it was damaged, you know, some folks would argue that it was towed there, but the car in front of it has, you know, dust and stuff on it still. They didn't clean it up. And there's marks on the pavement where they pushed the cars over to the side of the road. And why would they store the cars on a thoroughfare? If you turn them, you go ahead and tell them where they're going. But if you notice the window frames, they're just flopped down. The cars kind of
yeah, they're, it's like they're melted.
Yeah, but there's, you know, it has a new wax job right next to it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a hot heat necessarily.
Okay. Now, was this car appears to be on a bridge?
It's an underpass underneath an elevated. FDR drives right above it.
Okay. And is this car essentially in the spot where it died?
I do not know that. It could have died in the middle of the road, and they moved it over there.
Well, my curiosity about this is, if an energy wave came through there and took out the front part of this car, the back part is fine. It's not burned, and like you said, it looks like it's got a new wax job on it.
And there's some that were in that same area. I should put those pictures up as well, where there's like a round patch where the paint was untouched, just perfectly round in the middle of a blackened area.
Well, wouldn't my question is, though, if this energy wave came through and took this car out in the fashion that we're looking at here, if that's what did it, wouldn't it also have done structural damage to this bridge or this overpass?
Not necessarily. One trend I came to just, you know, noticing trends with the data is that a car, when it's up on, you know, its tires, it's not grounded. And the bridge is grounded. And there's a similar thing with the towers where the beams go into the ground.
Yeah.
That's where it stopped.
Hmm. Okay, now.
So we see those wheat checks sticking out of the ground.
We have another picture I'm going to put up now of an interior of a car. And this interior, it looks like there's a fire extinguisher in it. And it also looks like there's a newspaper laying there. Tell us about this. What are we looking at?
Oh, someone may have tossed trash in there afterwards. But what's peculiar is that car on the outside was, you know, has new wax job at the back end. And the back end looks untouched, except for the trunk lid released. But the front end of it is toasted, and there's just nothing left inside.
Okay, well, what's the deal with this fire extinguisher? Why are we looking at that?
This is what happened to be in the vehicle. But what's peculiar is there's rust in that vehicle,
mm-hmm.
but there's no holes in the roof. And it's under an overpass.
What does that indicate to you as a scientist?
There's a lot of rust I noticed that was instantly appearing that afternoon. If you notice the cover that goes over the, you know, between the two front seats, it looks like lace. You get little pinholes all through that steel. If you click on the picture, you get an enlargement of it.
Well, I'm not on your site. I've downloaded the pictures,
okay.
and they're
yeah,
being broadcast.
There's pinholes in the steel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're saying that to you, this has the appearance of having been subjected to some type of energy wave.
Did something weird happen to it?
Why wouldn't just fire do this?
Instant rust, and fire doesn't eat out holes like, looks like it's less than an inch apart. It looks like lacework. The metal looks probably dissolved, kind of like Swiss cheese.
Hmm. All right. Okay, we've gotten the overview that you think that this is some type of an energy, directed energy device that has done this. But lay it out for us. Make the case.
There's a picture.
I said lay it out for us, and I wasn't watching the clock. A break just took over.
Okay.
And so we'll come back after the break, and we'll let you make the case there. We'll be back, folks, right after this. back to the Kevin Smith Show. As we went away for break, Dr. Wood, I had said, lay it out for us, make the case. And then I had to cut you off almost immediately, for which I sincerely apologize. But let's go back to that. Make the case for us. Why should we think, as you do, that this is done by a directed energy device of some type?
Well, the reason why I've gone to, you know, zillion pictures and have, you know, it's in your face from all directions, is that's what I needed to do to figure out what was happening, and to be convinced, because, remember, I didn't know that such weapons existed beforehand, but it defines what the weapon does as you look at it. First of all, the building looks like, if folks go to the website, drjudywood.com/WTC, they'll find a picture, page full of pictures. And there's, I've got those names of
Your audio just cut out. So there's names of what?
Oops, can you hear me now? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead. There are pictures of what? I mean, there are names of what?
Oh, these are it's a page full of pictures that are my favorite pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And if folks go to the website, drjudywood.com/WTC,
uh-huh,
all lowercase, they'll get to this page. And one of the most important pictures I found was where the building just turns to dust. It looks like a drinking fountain. I call it a bubbler.
Yeah, I've got that on the screen right now. So describe to us, what are we seeing there?
The building is turning to dust in midair. It with controlled demolition, the stuff slammed to the ground that, you know, gets busted up. But this is just dissolving. That's just dust landing on the ground, powder.
And that is one of the things that all of the people, you know, at the time, that were on the street, they ran from this cascade of dust that was coming down the road at them. And they all commented about that. So what is capable of turning steel and glass and concrete into dust like this?
And everything into dust.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that hit me was that there's no toilets left. You should have 3,000 toilets from those two towers.
Or at least big pieces of them anyway.
Yeah, recognizable pieces, because, you know, shiny porcelain, mm-hmm, you would recognize it, but there's not a single one identifiable.
All right, so what is it, what kind of energy, what kind of weapon is capable of doing this?
I'm going to torture you and keep forcing the different aspects of the data.
All right.
Another one of the various interesting things I discovered is it's a section called fuzzballs. I've used these generic names, kind of almost elementary school language, mm-hmm, because they don't come loaded with biases. You know, if we see, you know, hazy air and we call it smoke, then we think of fire. So if we just call it like fumes, then until we just figure out what it is, that helps hold off the biases. In section F, I have what I call, and I'm sorry, section K is fuzzballs.
Okay.
And that was a big moment in seeing that picture. It's upstream, upwind of the World Trade Center by about a full block. And the wind was blowing south that day, so as soon as the North Tower had gone poof, that's what I call it, going poof, the dust settled out fairly quickly, you know, in 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
But then you start noticing around the feet of these firemen and policemen, this out-of-focus kind of fuzzy stuff. I call those fuzzballs. And then a little bit later, you notice that they're coming up more and more. When people came out of their hiding places, when the buildings went poof, afterwards they come out of their hiding places, and all this fine stuff rising up from the ground. That fine of dust could not have settled out of the air in 15 minutes. Which means that whatever it was coarse dust that landed and continued breaking down. So it's something that's causing the molecules to continue to break more and more until the stuff fine, it starts walking up into the sky. I remember seeing that for months afterwards.
All right, and so I'll ask you again, what can cause that?
Well, I got to look at more and more of these things and came up with a long list of various characteristics. I didn't still know what it was. And so I was looking at one day at how the Tower 2 went poof, you know, it just started all suddenly turning into dust.
Mm-hmm.
It was like when water turns into steam. And I was thinking, well, I wonder if there's something that causes molecules to reject each other instead of attract each other. And I started doing some searches, and I came up with this name, John Hutchison.
Uh-huh.
And looked at his material. I'd never seen it before. And every single one of the phenomena I had found at the World Trade Center complex matched. It was a one-to-one correlation. It was pretty amazing. Now I could see where each one of these weird phenomenon could be reproduced. I'm not saying that's the exact same thing, but if it isn't, it's pretty close.
So you're saying we're looking at
energy interference.
So you're saying that we're looking at the Hutchinson effect being played out on a large scale here.
Like it's been supersized.
Mm-hmm.
Or something very similar to it. And what I know from my background in interferometry, that I just interfered optical beams, but you can also interfere other types of energy beams and do different things, and that's exactly what the Hutchinson effect is.
All right, so how would you focus this on those two buildings and then later on Tower 7? How could you focus this instead of it just being like a general cloud of energy around? How can this be done?
Well, I think that it's a combination of things. I don't think it's just one component. Remember, it's interference. So if you have one, type of cloud of energy and maybe another, and you want to control exactly where it happens, where the events happen, maybe there's a particular catalyst you give it in that one place to cause it to occur there. And it's kind of like when you look at lightning.
Okay.
So you have the low clouds and you have the ground and you have a potential between them. Where is that lightning going to strike? There's something that causes it to prefer one place over another, and you could do something at a particular place that would trigger it to strike there. Now, I'm not saying we're talking about lightning, but that's just an example of an energy field that exists, see, but then just with the right trigger, you could get something to occur at a particular place.
All right. Now, there is a photograph on your site. You have several photographs of various workers walking amongst what looks like steam, and I've got one up now. And you say on your site that that is not steam. Explain that to us.
Well, so you picked it right. If the workers are walking through it,
uh-huh.
Would you walk through your barbecue grill while it's steaming like that?
Well, looks like they've got on fireman's clothing. They walk right up in the middle of burning buildings all the time.
I'm not sure which picture you're looking at.
Well, it's we can see a piece of a crane on the left. Looks like we can see some.
No, it's right.
Yeah.
No, I know which one it is. The fact that that crane is there, telling.
Why is that?
There's an a temperature at which you can operate those.
What's the top temperature at which you can operate those?
82 degrees. Centigrade before you permanently damage the hydraulic equipment.
And what would the temperature have been if this were steam coming up here?
Well, what is steam? It's water. It's water that's gotten hotter than boiling temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And boiling temperature is 100 degrees centigrade.
Okay.
And so, in order for the hydraulic equipment to be there, it cannot be very high. Plus, you know, humans can't breathe in air over boiling temperature for very long before they don't make it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't be just walking around in.
Okay, so if this is not steam, what is this?
I believe it's molecular dissociation of whatever process was started. It did not stop. That was another concern I had about what I was noticing. Because, you know, this dust that lands on the ground and then turns into finer and finer particles, so it starts wafting up. They immediately scrub the streets. So, you know, you have to have a tough time explaining why the streets look like they're steaming. But then I was wondering, what do they do with the lawn? You know, the grass out in front of, like, the World Financial Center had grass lawns. I found some pictures of them, and it turns out they brought in what looks like potting soil and dumped, covered the ground, and there's dirt all over the place, and they're constantly chucking dirt in and out. And still to this day, that is going on. So it's a process that it's not self-quenching.
Okay, so they're constantly trucking dirt in and out of that area?
Yes, still.
And do they say why?
No, nobody knows anything. I was up there a year ago and took some pictures of a traffic cop wearing a yellow hazmat suit. And it's, sunny, like 75 degrees. This guy's walking around with sleeveless shirts and so forth. This guy has this rubber yellow hazmat suit, and there's another picture of some guys hosing each other's boots down like they're going through decontamination.
And that was when? This past summer? You said that was this past summer? Well, we've lost your audio, Dr. Wood. I don't know what the problem is there. We may need to call you on your landline in order to reestablish the audio. What I'm looking at really does, and I'm certainly not disputing you, I'm not a scientist and I'm in no way qualified to make any kind of judgment on this. I'm just saying it certainly looks like steam. But I see your point that if it were steam, the machinery couldn't be functioning there. I don't know.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
You sound like you're in the bottom of a can. Probably since you're on Skype, if you do anything else on your computer, it's going to do that.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear us? Okay, she cannot hear us. We will reestablish contact with her in just a moment, and we'll do that using a real landline, as we prefer. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I am Kevin Smith, your host. My guest this evening, Dr. Judy Wood. And we've reestablished contact with her on a different line, so perhaps we will not have audio dropout. And Dr. Wood, now, I was saying when we ran into the audio problem that I'm not a scientist, and in no way am I qualified to dispute anything you're saying, and I'm not disputing it. But when we look at the picture, it looks like steam. But you're saying that this is, in fact, not steam. It's not vapor. It is tiny, tiny particles of solid matter that fell to the ground and continued to degrade. Is that, do I understand that correctly?
Right, and there's some kind of process that is continuing where this comes up.
It's continuing to this day.
Pardon me?
Is it continuing to this day?
Yes. They're still trucking dirt in and out. It's one of the problems why they haven't been able to rebuild very quickly. And they can't rebuild on the exact same site. It's, you know, they're turning into a memorial, but I suspect that is why. But again, that's just speculation, but from what I've seen, that there's still problems. And the dirt, they stir it around and take it back out and bring more in. And it looks like, you know, really rich potting soil, which is kind of odd.
All right, now, you mentioned earlier that to you, as you look at the videos and as you look at the photographs, it looks to you like what we have come to know as the Hutchinson effect happening to the building. Wouldn't that require a rather massive amount of electronic equipment somewhere to do that?
Not if the energy comes from the air, or, you know, from the surroundings. The Hutchinson effect doesn't require much energy at all.
Okay, so you're talking about using free energy and directing it against the building. How would they get it to start from the top down?
Well, for one thing, the building looked like it was dissolving for, you know, some time before. It was interesting, before it actually, you know, really came apart. I call it fuming, and lathering up is this really heavy stuff coming out, and I believe that's part of the building. But there's another thing I noticed on that day when I was looking at, carefully looking at some of the fume pictures, and it looks like it goes up in the upper atmosphere, and I wanted to get a better look. So I went looking for weather satellite images, and that's when I found this huge hurricane right outside of New York City on 9/11.
Really? Now, I had not, I didn't know there was a hurricane out there.
Right. Why didn't we?
Well, I would presume.
For like 4 days straight, and then it got right, you know, outside New York City on the morning of 9/11. Turned around and started heading straight back out of town. There's reports of thunder at JFK Airport, at LaGuardia Airport, at Newark Airport, and various other places around there. There's rain on Long Island. The outer bands of it were right about the edge of Long Island. And I got to looking, you know, more at hurricanes, tornadoes, and of course lightning. They all have something in common. You know, each one's a little slower moving than the other. But looking at a tornado, and especially a hurricane, it looks like a big Tesla coil.
Okay.
And we know that Tesla coils create field effects around them. And also, if you ask someone with arthritis, if a storm is coming, they can tell you. They can sense it.
And
because of field effects.
Okay,
just
because of the field effects.
Of the, you know, really obvious part of the storm, the visual part.
All right, now, I have a photo up that this particular photograph, let me see, is called Smoke Rings.
Okay.
What's the significance of that?
I was noticing various, odd things about what the buildings were doing. And you have this heavy, dense stuff, you know, fuming going up. But those look like smoke rings where there's intermittent skipping.
Okay.
And I was just
and we can I can see a flame in the window though. I can see a flame in the side of the building there in through one of the windows.
Well, you see a yellow spot.
Yeah.
There's various things that look like they're fire, but you also see that same thing with Hutchison effect and with EVOs.
What is an EVO?
Let's see, exotic vacuum object.
Okay. And so you're saying that this is likely not fire.
Correct. There's pictures I have of, I think, a category I call weird fires.
Uh-huh.
And you see firefighters just walking through the fire, and paper around it is not burning.
Well, yeah, but now, as a law enforcement officer in my former occupation, I have been in burning buildings to try and rescue people before the fire department arrived. And I've seen weird fires like that in a burning house where you had something on fire and other stuff around it wasn't burning.
Have metal that's kind of glowing orange.
Mm-hmm.
The most telling thing is, aluminum does that because aluminum, if it's hot enough to glow, it should be melted. But some of these weird fires, it doesn't appear to have smoke coming up from them.
All right, now we've got one here called Silly String. What's the deal with that?
I categorize that, it looks like silly string.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out what caused that and why do we have that. And it's you can see it in WTC buildings. If it was a projectile from an explosion, that usually goes kind of in a smooth line. It would travel in a curve pattern. It doesn't travel this weird corkscrew pattern. And I believe the corkscrew pattern is an interaction of fields that causes it to do that.
Okay, now, in this particular picture, Silly String, we can see coming from the left side and moving to the right about a... I don't know. Looks like it's about a fourth of the distance. It looks like a line of fire that goes right across one floor of the building there.
In one of those silly string pictures. Yeah, it looks like fire. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We don't have to decide that. If it is fire, it's not what's fatal to the building. In 1975, there was a huge fire around, I think, 10th, 11th, 12th floor of Tower 1.
All right.
But because they didn't have a sprinkler system. And after several hours, they got the fire under control, but it was a lot of damage, fire damage. There was no question of the strength of the building being affected.
All right.
And so there could be real fires, or could be just weird fires. I don't have a way of knowing for sure on that. But what interested me in those images was that what I call silly string, that corkscrew type pattern.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now we have heard from several sources that the amount of heat that would have been generated by burning jet fuel would not have been sufficient to weaken the steel sufficiently for the building to come down. At what temperature would we expect a structural failure?
Oh, the whole building would be glowing bright red for a little while. One aspect that comes into play for civil engineering here is that buildings are built with a safety factor. And depending on where they're built, that's multiplied by an importance factor. So if you have a quarter mile tall building in the middle of Manhattan or in the middle of Iowa, a cornfield, there'd be very different requirements because in the middle of a cornfield in Iowa, if that thing falls over, it's not going to take out anything else around it. But if that building comes down in Manhattan, it's going to cause damage to, it's going to take out all of Manhattan. So they have to really over-design it by huge amounts. And the chances of losing even half of the building is still going to be standing. And the redundancy is just tremendous.
All right, we have to take a break. And when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we'll open up the telephone lines for you, for your questions and your comments with Dr. Judy Wood. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm Kevin Smith, your host, and my guest this evening is Dr. Judy Wood. We're going to open the telephone lines for you now, and those of you who are watching via our internet TV feed, telephone number is appearing on your screen. And for those of you who are listening via radio, the telephone number is 602-539-9580. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington State. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. We can barely hear you. Let me turn you up a little bit here. All right.
I just had a question for Judy, and I'll take it off the air. Was there ever a piece of a plane, any parts of a plane found after the Trade Center collapsed? Has there ever been any piece of a plane that has been found underneath the rubble? And I'll take it off the air.
All right. Thanks for the call. How about that? Did they find any piece of the plane?
All of it. I think he's asking about, are there any plane pieces found?
That's correct.
I don't believe so. That was, well, not that belonged to a 767.
That belonged to any kind of plane.
One engine that was sitting under a canopy up the few blocks away that would belong to a 727 or 737. And in order to get there from where it would have had to go, it would have had to go through a few buildings. So it made no sense. But there's no other parts that have been identified as belonging to a 767 of any kind.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hello. It's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
And you're 3,000 miles down the phone line from us. We can't hear you, but try.
Is my connection bad again?
Very.
Oh, boy.
Well, you go ahead, I'll repeat the question for her.
Okay, I'll try to see about what I can do. You know, I agree with you and I disagree with you, Ms. Wood, I've never bought the official story of 9/11 whatsoever. I don't buy it, to the point of saying that I think there was probably some inside elements to 9/11. But, when I look at the explosion, now, I've spoken with people who were witness to the attacks and they did see planes hitting that building. But I do agree with your assessment, from what I've seen anyway, with probably some energy, directed energy weapons being used during the September 11th attacks. But I know people who were there did see the big planes hitting those buildings. I know, because I've spoken with some of the witnesses. I listened to Alex Jones. I've seen Loose Change. I've seen those videos. I've seen Truth Rising. And listening to the witnesses and whatnot.
Okay, we got the point. Do you have a question?
No, I just wanted to make a statement, but to also disagree that, I probably do have a question, the fact that perhaps both were used, that both the planes and the energy weapons were used at the same time, perhaps using the planes as sort of a deception and using the direct energy weapons to test to see how well their weapons work. That's all I wanted to say, that could be a theory.
All right. Thank you for the call. Okay, I could barely hear him myself, but let me try to repeat. He agrees with some of what you say. He disagrees with the thing about that there were no planes that hit the building because he has talked to witnesses that saw it happen. They were there, and they saw big planes hit the building. But then he had a...
I'm fairly convinced of that, but you know, there's a whole lot of different things they could be seeing.
Such as
it was to appear that way.
What could they be seeing?
There's you know, again, we're getting into area speculation, but there's various technologies that can project images, and like in 1999. There's an article in the Washington Post called When Seeing is Believing, and also another one called Lying with Pixels.
Okay.
They're talking about, in the Washington Post article, about projecting an image of Allah over Baghdad to try to do something with the people and have Allah tell them something. And they had the technology available then and were making it public then, which means it's probably been available for years before then. But that was 1999. So they're capable of projecting images. And I do believe, you know, I can come up with a way of doing it that I can see is very possible myself. But I don't know exactly how they did it. But what seemed interesting is there's a chopper that was just south of the South Tower when supposedly this, what appeared to be, a big jet flew underneath them. If you have a big jet flying right, you know, next to a chopper, is it going to toss it in the air?
Well, it might. It depends on how much separation there is. It might.
The witness there said it was less than, I think, 300 feet or something like that.
In that case, yeah, I think you would hit some turbulence, yeah.
There's no turbulence reported. And the guy just couldn't understand what he was seeing, and he said it looked like it just flew right through the building out the other side, like an evil magic show.
Wow. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. I would like to thank the doctor for her work. I've seen her site, and I find it very interesting. I also believe that the story isn't what has been portrayed. Also, I've seen sites where when we attacked Iraq the second time, that at the airport, I've seen pictures and stuff, that at first they believed that we actually used a nuclear device, that there was people melted and everything was burned and stuff. You didn't see it on regular media. They tried to cover it up, but it proves that I've seen that directive energy weapons have been used in Iraq. And even at the first war, Sports Club said that we have stuff to throw at him that you guys wouldn't even imagine.
I can testify that I did see and hear General Schwarzkopf say that. He did say it. It was in a news conference. He certainly did say it.
Yeah. So, personally, I believe that in our Constitution, we're to stand up against forces, foreign and domestic. I believe that we're domestically under attack, with under no power less than all the world wars that we've been in. And that, using your own words, we're suffering from connectivitis, you know, and I hope people wake up soon.
All right, now let me ask you this. Why do you think that we are under attack from within? What makes you think that?
Because of when in any time something like that would happen, and so many people know that, you know, buildings, you know, there's no steel building that's ever been brought down by fire, and it was built to take tremendous pressure, even being hit by an airplane. It was designed for that. In the world, I mean, there's buildings that, steel buildings that have been burning for days and they don't fall down. So, I mean, the whole story is bull, you know, if you want to look at it. And I think they're using that to take away our rights. I mean, they're systematically disassembling our Constitution under the guise of the Patriot Act or whatever to keep us safe. It's to, you know, just to dismantle America. Bush has done more to this country.
Okay. Now, we're not going to get into politics. Okay? We'll talk about events. We'll talk about evidence. But as far as getting into politics, what happens, and let me explain this. Let's say that what you think happened, let's say it happened, all right? Let's say, just for the sake of argument, that this was staged and that this was an inside job. We still are speculating when we start putting names to it. You have to have evidence to put the names to it. So that's why we're not going to get into that. But we'll take a look at the evidence, and certainly it's weird evidence. By weird, I mean what we look at doesn't appear to fit what we were told. And I agree with that. It doesn't appear to fit the official report. Terry, do you think that since you apparently think that we're under attack from within, who do you think is going to win? Which side is going to win this?
If America, you know, there's a lot of people that's awake and aware of this. And then there's a lot of people just going through their daily lives, you know, getting by with their job and, you know, and watching the boob tube. And we're at a point now where if we don't seriously hold our government accountable, I think we're almost at the point of no return already.
Well, Terry, I hope you're wrong. And I got a sneaking suspicion you hope you're wrong too. I'm not saying you are wrong. I hope you're wrong.
I think otherwise. It's just, you know, it's just everything that's happening. And then we try and hold people accountable, you know, and they're unpatriotic, and it's ridiculous. I mean, you can't even, mother can't even protest the war because her son got killed. I mean, it's a shame.
All right, Terry, thanks for the call. Interesting. The telephone line is open, folks, and we would love to hear from you. The telephone number is 602-539-9580. And as I said, we'd love to hear from you. Do understand, I hope you do, folks, understand that it's one thing to look at the forensic evidence, the physical evidence, and say that doesn't fit. It's another thing to say this person or that person is responsible. If you have the evidence that ties it to them, then go for it. But if you don't have the evidence that you could defend in court that ties it to specific people, you're really playing a dangerous game when you start trying to tie it to them. And by dangerous, I mean lawsuits and, you know, defamation suits and things like that can happen. If you've got the evidence that ties it to them, go for it. But you gotta have. Do you remember the Dr. Wood? You remember the commercial that used to come on where the old lady would say, "Where's the beef?"
I love it.
Yeah. Well, that's what we have to have.
At said what's left of the, quote, rubble pile. Like, where's the building?
Yeah. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Russ.
Hi, Russ.
And I'm in Cedar Rapids.
Well, are you a first-time caller?
I am.
Unfortunately, my applause button seems to be broken. Let me try this one.
Call the Kevin Smith Show now.
That's not it.
Well, hey, I just wanted to ask Dr. Wood. I've studied her work a little bit, and I just kind of like to know a little bit more about the seismic data that she's put on her site, as well as the magnetometer data, and how that relates to the shaking of the building and how the buildings were affected during the time that they were coming apart.
All right, Dr. Wood.
My question off the air.
Thanks for the call.
That's an excellent question. You know, there's another thing that tells me something was amiss, that if you have a gravity collapse, whether it's from bombs in the building or from fire or whatever, the stuff goes bang on the ground, you should have a certain seismic signal associated with that. You know, it should make kind of a little earthquake sound, you know, vibration.
Yeah.
The seismic signal for the North Tower and the South Tower were equivalent to what the bottom 20 stories or bottom 16 stories would have done if they had slammed to the ground. It was just a fraction of what the towers were. And
what would account for that?
Pardon me?
What would account for that?
It kind of indicates that the towers did not slam to the ground.
Okay, but obviously something slammed to the ground since you got a seismic reading that was equivalent to the bottom 16 to 20 stories.
It was like 16 for one and 20 for the other. Yeah, there were a few pieces here and there that did, you know, the bottom parts. But I believe the very top or the, you know, well above the halfway point was completely turned to dust and just came down like snow. Because there's none of the adjacent buildings have what I call stab wounds. You know, there's no chunks of building that stab into them.
Uh-huh.
The highest stab wound, and there's really only like a couple of stab wounds in the adjacent buildings, is the 18th floor. Now, what happened with Bankers Trust was slightly different. I believe that accidentally was hit with whatever gizmo it was. Like this. Building 4, which was across the street, the entire body of Building 4 is missing. It's gone.
What do you mean by that, the entire body? You mean the outside veneer?
No. The building is gone.
The whole building's
gone?
That's
the dust that's left.
Okay.
It looks like it was cut off with a surgical knife. The north wing is still standing, and you see these floors, you know, empty, you know, hanging there. You can look in and see what was on somebody's desk on the 8th floor. But there's just nothing on the ground of the main body of the building.
So it was vaporized.
Of Building 6, completely, you know, empty down to ground level.
So essentially what you're saying then is it was vaporized.
Yeah, I wouldn't use that word because that has a meaning already assigned to it. I developed a new word, dustified.
Dustified.
But I think it's a new process we've not seen before. The building turned to dust. Vaporized implies heat, and I see no indication of high heat.
No indication of high heat at all.
Right. You remember those big rolling clouds that roll down the streets?
Yeah.
And you remember those pictures we saw a lot of where somebody's running and the cloud's chasing them?
Yeah.
When the cloud takes over and passes them by, they're just left covered with dust.
Right.
There's no burned bodies.
Okay, so, yeah, I understand what you're saying. So if that had heat in it, and if it was steam, then there should have been people burned.
Bodies laying around or people dead laying on the street.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people have talked about being ill now as a result of the debris, this dust that they breathed while working in, you know, to rescue people. And I wonder if you've looked into what's in the dust. Have you been able to get a sample of the dust to test it?
At this point, it would probably be too contaminated to be able to establish, a good paper trail, and it would be contaminated. She wouldn't be able to tell what was what. But I think there's pretty clear evidence of seeing, what from all the images I've looked at, and also there's first responder testimony. There's some pretty interesting comments made of that.
Such as?
And one of the most bizarre things, people heard explosions.
Yeah.
And everyone talks about the explosions. Well, if you put a raw egg in your microwave and cook it, you're going to hear an explosion.
Okay.
Yeah, just explosive sounds do not mean dynamite. And there was a lot of first responder testimony about the Scott packs exploding that were in the fire trucks, extra Scott packs. They're the oxygen tanks the firefighters wear. And they were just exploding left and right. There's quite a few testimonies of that. And even fire trucks blowing up, they had them in them.
And those actually are made to go into the heat.
Right.
So they're on the trucks, and they're exploding on the trucks, but there's no heat to go with it.
Right. They're just parked right outside of the World Trade Center. That was what happened.
Well,
if you think about it, also in the building, there's lots of air pressure tanks. There's water tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are dissolving a pressurized tank, what's going to happen?
Well, you should get an explosion.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's a pressurized tank, once it reaches, you're degrading the tank, once it reaches a critical point where it no longer has the strength to
exactly
contain the pressure, then you would get an explosion, yeah. And we have no testimony of those happening?
Yes. These are people outside the building because they weren't in the building because they wouldn't be able to tell us about it at this point. But, yeah, there's testimony of the tanks exploding.
What happened then to the water that would be in these pressurized tanks?
I think all of the molecules just, separated. Every single thing in the building just demolecularized, kind of. If you'd had high heat, you would have had steam explosions.
Would you have had to have this beam of energy? There are buildings all around this thing. Would the beam of energy had to have come from above, or could it have come from some other place?
Well, from the holes, the cylindrical holes, from the overhead satellite image, like in Building 6, it looks like somebody took a post hole digger and just removed the inside part of the building. There's also a cylindrical hole in the middle of Liberty Street, as well as various other places.
Where is Liberty Street?
It looks like there's some kind of, maybe the catalyst beam was coming from above, but I believe the whole area had some kind of controlled environment in which anything could be the catalyst. I mean, something else could be the catalyst to just make it happen in a particular place. It's not just one component. And some other really interesting things, they were upside-down cars.
Okay.
They look just fine, except they're parked upside down. And round holes in windows. Marble facade missing, but no other damage to the front of the building. Just marble facade just totally turned to dust.
All right. So have you looked into what type of energy would have caused this kind of thing?
Very much like the Hutchison effect.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back. Don't go away, and we'll have more with Dr. Judy Wood and your questions and or comments right after this break.
for that special something? Shop the Kevin Smith Show Mall at kevinsmithshow.com.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Kevin Smith Show now at area code 602-539-9580.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, Dr. Judy Wood. We have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where are you calling from?
Charles, now back in Albuquerque.
Okay, well, I got to tell you, your telephone where you were has a better connection than what we've got right now. So you'll have to speak up for us.
Back in my old house phone and be the junk.
All right, Charles from Albuquerque, you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I was looking at the photographs of the damaged cars where they're look like they're burned at one end and perfectly okay at the other end. Couldn't that have been caused by a pyroclastic flow of hot material flowing down the street?
Well, what about that, Dr. Wood? Couldn't the...
Well, if something is going to burn it, but we didn't see any evidence of the pyroclastic flow because people weren't cooked. But when it rolled over the cars, if you're going to have something hot one place, how can 1 millimeter away have the new wax job? We saw various vehicles that were affected one place and not another. There's another interesting quirk, is that the engine blocks were kind of dissolved, even though the hood was still in place.
So,
a lot of that should be explained by the flow of the hydrodynamics.
But if it was a hot cloud flowing over it, you'd have black, white, shades of gray type damage, a gradual damage in various zones. Not as though somebody put masking tape down and cooked up one side, not the other.
Well, picture two mixing fluids.
And when I first realized...
Okay, hang on a second, Charles. Go ahead, Dr. Wynn.
When I realized it was interference of some kind of energy, was that would cause that.
All right.
Of distinct boundaries.
Okay, Charles, you had a comment?
Well, let me ask another question.
All right.
You indicated that the engine that was found was not from a 767, it was from a 737. I still would be curious how a 737 engine got there.
Yeah, how did the 737 engine, how would you think it got to where it was? I think you said it would have to go through several buildings to get there.
Right, because those streets are kind of narrow, like canyons. And how can something drop down in a canyon if it's doing a parabolic, curve?
Yeah, and, pretty curious.
And then you have to explain why you have a 737 engine there. Maybe it was cargo, but it wasn't part of the airplane that was flying, or that they claimed was flying.
All right, Charles, let me ask you something. What do you think happened? Do you buy the official report, or do you think that there's a possibility that there was some type of directed energy weapon used?
Well, I'm afraid I have to cleave to my old hero, William of Ockham. I just don't think it's necessary to invent things like directed energy beams or holographic images of airplanes or things of that nature to explain what we saw. I think it was pretty straightforward. We saw a great amount of energy being released in the destruction of those buildings. It was the same energy that was placed there when the buildings were constructed, beam by beam, lifted all that height up there. And all that energy is falling down. It's enough. The building was constructed in such a way that it could just fall in on itself and just, like you say, create powder out of everything.
All right. Now, what about, I understand what you're saying, but I find this pretty interesting, that the pile of rubble should have been around 20 stories tall. And it was lower than 8 stories. So how would you account for that, Charles?
I would say that is probably accounted for by the mechanism that the building used to kind of self-destruct. It didn't fall down in one big pile. It sort of started falling from the top, and it fell inwards. And as it fell inwards, it sort of self-destructed floor by floor as falling downwards. And making, like you say, a bunch of it into dust, which flowed outwards as a pyroclastic flow, accounting for a lot of the damage you saw to the 1,400 cars.
All right. You have any other question or observation?
No, I just like to say that I don't think it's necessary to hypothesize these other powers to explain what happened there. It was a tremendous release of energy, and I think there were some things that occurred that were not expected and that are still not explained. But I still don't think we have to believe that some powers, some undisclosed powers, have destroyed it with directed energy beams and holograms.
Fair enough. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right.
Something I'd like to add this time is Building 7.
Yeah.
That was even more extreme. You remember how I mentioned 16 to 20 stories for the towers?
Yeah.
Here you had each floor of Building 7 was more square footage than any of the tower floors. The thing was 47 stories tall. Yet when it supposedly slammed to the ground, it made the seismic impact of like a jackhammer. It was a 0.6. In some seismic charts, it was indistinguishable from background noise. And also, the various cameras that recorded the event, you could hear people talking in the background, and it was like a silent, you know, whisper quiet when the Building 7 did whatever it did. And it's equivalent to the bottom 2.5 stories slamming to the ground.
Okay, let's go.
It sounded like raining dump trucks.
All right, let's go back to the telephone.
Dump trucks worth of mass slamming to the ground.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Terry from Ohio.
Yeah.
Again. I just wanted to, you keep asking, like, where this energy came from. I know that I've seen a lot of photographs and video of the site as it went on, and there were several black helicopters that were going back and forth from the towers, and then there was also a reported white airplane circling New York after the all aircraft was ordered down. And then also it's kind of curious that they would Building 7 would be systematically destroyed. So I would speculate that the answer you're looking for is directly linked to Building 7 in instrumenting some of this destructive power.
Whoa. Let me make sure I understand what you just said. You think that the electronic devices that would have been necessary to do the directed energy against the World Trade Center, you think those devices may have been in Building 7?
I would think that personally, I mean, it's all speculation, I would believe that was in the airplane that was circling New York. But I also believe that there was explosives and thermite used, and I believe that was connected to Building 7, you know, to instrumentally, the evidence is clear that they had stuff in there that they didn't want no one ever to see, because there's no reason why that building came down. So it was obviously instrumental in how the building came down, I believe.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Terry.
Sure.
So what's the deal with Building 7? Could the fires over at the World Trade Center have brought Building 7 down?
I don't believe fires could have brought it down by itself, even if somebody lit matches all over the place. I think the building dissolved all afternoon, so there's nothing left by evening, and just the facade was left to drop.
Now, if there is this energy field around the building, wouldn't people out on the edges of that field have sensed it? Wouldn't they, I mean, like the hair on your arm stands up or something, wouldn't they have sensed that somehow?
Yes, there are folks who felt lifted, they said they were lifted up and set down elsewhere. There's a testimony of someone who said the force was so strong, it did this or that, and they weren't sure how they got lifted up and hit against the door. Some strange discussion. Some said that the hallway behind them disappeared as they were leaving the building. I thought that was pretty weird.
the hallway behind them just disappeared?
Yeah, and people disappeared.
Okay. Now,
testimony of a firefighter who was in Building 6 in the lobby, ground floor, with several others when the event happened. And when the dust cleared, he could look up at blue sky. And his buddies, you know, who were right next to him, you know, didn't exist anymore. That would have been pretty creepy.
Well, yeah, it would be pretty creepy.
He was just at the right place, but he survived.
And how would that work? I mean, if he just stepped out of the energy field? Is that the deal?
It affected pretty much the middle half of that building, and he was right at the edge, apparently just outside of where it happened.
All right, now, you have been on talk shows around the country talking about this this information and this this view that you have about a directed energy weapon or device being used to bring down the World Trade Center. Have you run into any sort of forces of the dark side, if you will, that are trying to keep you from getting the information out?
Oh, there's all sorts of interesting things that I've learned on the way. It makes it interesting. But I prefer to just keep talking about the complex.
What I'm asking is, have you personally experienced any harassment or anything of that nature?
Yes, but I don't like to... I don't like to spend time worrying about it.
Well, fair enough. All right. Now, the what other evidences did you see that this World Trade Center, these World Trade Center buildings, came down as a result of a directed energy device? We'll have to get that when we come back from break. All right, folks, we'll be back on the other side of this break and more with Dr. Judy Wood and your telephone calls at 602-539-9580 after the break.
get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at area code 602-539-9580.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone line is open, 602-539-9580 is the number, 602-539-9580. We're talking with Dr. Judy Wood, and she is a scientist. She is she has a PhD in I've put it away. What's your hang on, I got it right here. Materials Engineering Science from the Department of Engineering Science and Mechanics at Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University in Blacksburg, Virginia. She says it's her view that the World Trade Center and Building 7 were brought down by, I think we could say, unconventional means, and not by the means described in the official report. Now, let me ask you this, Dr. Wood, what's your goal with getting this information out?
Excellent. What we see here is, you know, 2 500,000-ton buildings turned to dust. That's an amazing technology, incredible technology. We see Building 7, well, we don't see it. It disappears. It doesn't even spill across the street when it goes poof. That is a demonstration of free energy, a technology that could be used for good purposes. And it could also probably split the Earth in half at a moment's notice. So I think we, as citizens of this planet, should decide how we want to use it. For good or for other things. But I think it's an excellent demonstration that free energy is possible. We saw it.
All right. There are other scientists around the country, I'm sure, that have taken a look at your site and have listened to what you have to say. What kind of feedback are you getting from the scientific community?
Positive, but I think everyone's kind of scared because, you know, what are we talking about here? This is a major change. I see it, controlling the energy controls the people. And if you can't control the energy, you don't get to control the people.
Oh.
It would dramatically change our way of life, but that's even an understatement in itself. It would change so much about everything we do, but I think for the better. Imagine, you know, what you could do with your life if you didn't have to worry about energy.
Well, energy is certainly a major part of everyone's budget. That's a fact. And even though we're experiencing a little bit of decrease now in the price of gasoline, that I am absolutely certain is temporary, and it's going to go back up again. And when it does, it'll go beyond where it went last time. And I'm just sure of that. That's the way it has always been. It goes way up, then drops back a little. And then it goes way up more and drops back a little, but not as far as it was the first time. And so I'm sure that's going to be the case.
I agree.
All right, so by getting this information out to the public, your goal is to inform us that there is free energy. And then what beyond that? Now that I know there's free energy, the question is, so what? I can't use it. So what do you suggest?
We need to figure out how to develop it for good uses, as I think Tesla was attempting to do. I think his goal was free energy for mankind everywhere.
And how do we go about doing that?
I think there's a lot of people out there who could do it. I don't know. I think it involves figuring out how to deal with the political issues, for one. That's not my area, because there'll be a lot of resistance to it. But I think the more knowledge people have of it, the more empowered they are for doing something about it, that they don't have to pay high prices. And it's not, you know, a pie-in-the-sky wish thing that some futuristic development. It's here. It was demonstrated. That's the most important thing, I think.
All right. You mentioned John Hutchinson. Have you been in touch with him? Have you talked with him?
Yes, I have. And I've been to visit him and seen his lab and his samples. And it turns out I discovered more characteristics in his samples than others had noticed as well. Pretty interesting samples.
What did he think of your let's call it a theory or your view of 9-1-1? What did he think? Did he think that it matched?
Yeah, and I think it's kind of scary to all. We gave a talk in Portland at the beginning of the summer, both of us together, and someone in the audience said, well, you know, John's stuff is so unreliable, you know, how could it possibly be used on the World Trade Center? And I pointed out, John didn't do 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just, you know, does educational things with on a very small scale.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the same principle. This is on a larger scale. All the fingerprints of it. I'm not saying necessarily the exact same thing, but something very like it. Energy that has been interfered.
And that is your field of expertise.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, on the one hand, this is amazing information. On the other hand, it's really disturbing information, because then we have to ask ourselves the next questions. As you said, the political side of it goes beyond you. That's not what you're involved in. It goes beyond the scope of this show. It's not what we're involved in. But the next questions lead us there. After we look at this, if we determine that, yeah, that's correct, it was a directed energy weapon, then you've got, okay, now we know what done it, who done it, and why. And those are really disturbing areas to think about. I'm not going to ask you to speculate. I'm not going to ask you to give us names or anything, but let me just ask you this. Have you personally given some thought to those questions, and have you come to conclusions on them?
I think it's, I think it goes to a pretty high and far-reaching control. I don't think there's a person.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is more important is that we see that this technology exists.
Do you?
And I think they wanted us to see that too.
Well, do you think that this is
left behind? That it's so clear. Once you get over the psychological impact, and when people are stressed, they believe what they're told easily. Mm-hmm. They have questions. You give them an answer. They quit asking questions. But if you look carefully at the evidence, you say, well, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. That's the first step, is to realize something happened that was horrendous. But to figure out, there's a lot at stake here, and I think there's a big deciding point in maybe our planet's history. we can use it for good.
All right, Dr. Judy Wood, I want to thank you for being with us. If you will, stay on the line with me a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings to a close another edition of The Kevin Smith Show and another week here at The Kevin Smith Show. My friends call me Steeleye. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.